Blog Talk Radio.
Glad all of you are here. One thing we want to make sure is, did you get your taxes done? Today is the last day to get your federal income taxes into the government so that you won't be penalized. So for those of you that may not have gotten them in, you got till midnight tonight.
No, wrong.
Okay.
Tomorrow.
No, midnight tonight. Are you sure?
Positive.
Yeah, it's Monday.
Oh, sorry. Okay, for those of you that are listening, I was wrong.
Never mind.
I have a panel. Let me just tell you who's on the line. We got Ron right now in Miami. He was on the line. We have Bruce also, who is in Michigan, on the line. We have Frank coming in, who is in Virginia, on the line. So we want to say hello. I know that we just got a message. I just got a message from one of our panelists, Don, who said he's at the Heat playoff game. I wish him all the best down there, and we will send him remarks later. But I want to get started tonight. And if you hear something you like and want to call in and talk to us, do that. Our number is 646-668-8740. I want to start off by something that hit me, and it's been hitting me every day that I pass this road. There's a big billboard facing me as I drive down the highway. It's 96 up in Michigan, and it's a big billboard, and it's a woman. The whole billboard is a woman nursing a child, and it's very visual that she's nursing her. In other words, her breasts are very public, and the billboard, all it says is, get over it. And I'm like, why are we doing this? And I've heard that there are a lot of discussions about women publicly nursing their kids. I want to get some views from the panel. My view is, I'm not in favor of this kind of a thing going on. I guess I'm just old school, but in my opinion, I like women who are more professional and classy, that wouldn't have just popped their breast out in public to feed their kids. I guess I didn't grow up that way, and I'm not used to it. And when that did happen, there was some cover. You know, women would put diapers over them or something like that. It seems that that's gone away. Now we're faced with women out in public feeding their kids when they feel like they want to, and the sign is, get over it, which is, I'm sure, thousands of people see it on a daily basis. I want to get some thoughts on that. I know, Ron, you and I talked about that a little bit. I don't remember exactly all the things you told me, but you kind of agree that it's okay, right?
Yeah, I personally don't see a problem with it. And I don't think it has anything to do with whether a woman is classy or not. I think it's just more a sign of the liberated women of today that, feel that it's just a natural just something that comes naturally, that is meant to be. And, actually, if you look at nudity and women nudity in Europe, I mean, for decades, they've been, quote, unquote, okay with it. And it's here in this country particularly, and maybe in the Latin American countries, where it's been more taboo. So, I don't think it has anything to do with class. I think maybe it has more to do with the different cultures. And I mean, like, I know, I'm pretty sure in Japan that would definitely not be accepted. But I personally see it as a natural thing, and it wouldn't bother me if I saw it. And I have seen it. And, I just continue on as if I had never seen it. I mean, it doesn't bother me at all.
What about you, Bruce?
Well, I do agree with Ron in the fact that it's a natural thing. There are a lot of natural things that go on with our bodies and in our relationships that don't necessarily have to be upfront. Every culture has certain, I don't want to say rules and limits, certain ways that they behave in their culture. And yes, ours is changing. But I the word I would use, I don't have a problem with it either, as Ron said, but I sure don't see the problem in a young lady or any lady for that matter that wants to feed her child to do it with some discretion. Because of how we're brought up and still a lot of people that do have a little bit of that, want a little bit of that decor, why can't they cover up? It's not the act I object to. It's the way that they want to draw attention to themselves by doing it in a flamboyant way, if I can say that. That's the part I don't agree with. I mean, you know, there's another quick example. Those public restrooms in, what is it, in New York or something, that's basically a hole in the ground of concrete, and you just stand out there in all your glory. Well, that's a natural thing. What's the problem with that? Well, it's not something I'd really like to see. I mean, the act is natural. The way you do it maybe can use some more discretion.
Yeah, I agree, Bruce, that and the times that I have seen it being done, they have covered themselves up, but they're still doing it in public, but they have covered themselves up. I think I tend to agree that, you know, just pulling it completely out without any discretion is, in our culture, is a little bit, a little bit over the top, maybe. I'm curious.
Yeah.
I'm curious about those urinals in New York. Do you see the genitalia or you don't?
Oh yeah, it's kind of like half shrouded with a canvas, like a curtain. You walk around the curtain, you just pee into a hole, and you walk away.
Because I know in Paris they have public restrooms in the streets, but you don't see anything, I don't think.
No, this is out pretty much out in the open. There's some people, you know, are saying, is it healthy and this and that. And it may not be New York, but it's a big American city. I forgot which one it was. But, again, it's not so much what they're doing. It's, I think a lot of those people kind of want to titillate people a little bit. I mean, what's wrong with being a little more discretionary about it in our culture? Because our culture came up that way. It doesn't mean it all has to go away in an instant. That's all I'm saying.
Are those public bathrooms maybe for the homeless people? Because I know, for instance,
and they can use any bodily movement they want in that restroom, I guess.
But any passerby can see them doing it?
Yeah. If they walk around the wrong side of that petition, you bet.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's interesting. Because I know here in downtown, they started bringing in, portable, they're not portalets, but they're more a little fancier. And they actually station them for a period of time. And it's for homeless people, which, you know, when I first saw it, I said, you know, we've really gone over the top now, because now we're actually encouraging, I guess, maybe even more so, people to be homeless. But, you know, then on the other hand, I also don't want them defecating and urinating all over the streets that I walk through every day.
Right, right.
But you know, women have so many avenues other than feeding in public nakedly. I mean, there's pumps and they've come through the years of making it easy for a woman to do it. I think just popping your breast out in public and feeding kids is just like it's not what I would want to be seeing. I understand it. Now, if a woman, you know, covers up or puts a diaper or something over and does it, I have no problem with that. It just, I think I've seen a lot of talk recently on the internet and on TV about, why do they have to cover up? Why should a woman have to cover up to feed her kids? So my question is, so why do I have to cover up if I want to take a piss in the middle of the street then? So if I can do it for one, why is it good for everyone?
Yeah, this is Frank.
And what you
Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, being with an organization that has run a billboard, not that type of billboard. We've run one with the hijab, which is the Muslim head cover on buses and things like that. And the purpose of that billboard is to transmit a signal to all of our brains that it is okay for a person to wear a headscarf or to breastfeed their baby. It's a natural function. We may not be adjusted to it. We may not like it, but we shouldn't be ashamed of it because it is what it is. And, you know, cows, you know, other animals feed their young. And some of the women are going to show discretion, you know, because they don't want to be seen. Some people are going to look the other way, and some people are going to stare at, you know, the child while they're being breastfed. These public restroom issues, it was kind of funny you mentioned that because if on a certain type of military aircraft, you're going to get the same type of toilet and urinal with basically a drape around it. But it does have a cover on each side. You can come in. There's no door. You basically walk around the curtain and take care of your business. And that's a significant improvement because it takes in consideration having the toilet versus just the urinal, that it's a bisexual, you know, use. It facilitates bisexual use. But so I don't really see a problem. I mean, if I'm on the golf course and I have to go to the bathroom and I'm a male, you know, the whole universe of the golf course is up for, you know, my use on a discretionary basis. It's an unlawful act, but you do it discreetly, and it works. Whereas females have some other issues, and I think one of those issues are that display that you guys are just spoken of. The world has changed from the time that, you know, we grew up, and we transitioned this. Some people are still using, pillow or some other towel or whatever, and then putting it over the baby's head. Other people don't want to do that. And some people are going to use discretion. They may not do it at the presidential inaugural ball, straight out feed the baby. They may take the baby and take to a feeding place. But that's their option. I think that's what they're trying to tell us.
And maybe some of those are exhibitionists, and they like people to see, you know, them feeding their babies. You never know. It could be.
Yeah, some people don't. Yes, you're right. Some people don't. I mean, in Europe, for instance, you know, if you're naked, to be naked on the beach is not considered a big thing at all by their standards. And that's been for, you know, my whole lifetime since I've been a young 17 or 18 year old. Whereas America only has a few nude beaches. And so, you know, it's like in Key West. You know, if you go down to Key West, I was looking at a sign one time and I didn't get it. But the sign basically was, it's the Barefoot Bar, I believe it is, or something like that. And that bar, they encourage you not to wear clothes. And there's a kind of a sign. You got to read it just like that billboard there. So I got some feedback from it because I stared at the sign, didn't get it. But I saw some people who had been to that bar the evening before. And it worked like this. The older guy said he got, his wife said he had a treat, because he visually got a chance to see young people without clothes, whereas the lady said, all I saw was a bunch of old guys, you know, and it wasn't as much fun for her, okay? So we laugh because, you know, if you read the sign, it's sort of like that billboard. You don't immediately get it, but it's there, and at that particular pace, people drop their clothing as they come through the door. You know, it's a balcony. It's an outdoor place where you can look over the town. It's a half wall that separates you. If you bend over, you know, you can top, but they won't see your bottom. But everybody else there sees everything else that anybody else, God has given them or hasn't given them.
There's actually a fairly large nude beach here in South Florida, in Miami. And you'd be surprised. I mean, you go there and you see families, you know, older people, you see younger people, you see kids, you see babies, you see everything. And it's a fairly large beach, and you know, if you're not into nudism or whatever, you know, you do have a sign as you're walking into that area of the beach that says, you know, topless or not topless, but you're entering a nudist beach area or something like that. And you know, of course, there's lots of people that wear their clothes and just walk past there normally, and you know, it's nothing out of the ordinary, just like any other beach.
Gentlemen, let me reverse it on you. Listening to what you had to say, let me switch it. What if we as Americans went to a Muslim country or some other country and said, I'm offended that you're all covered up. I would like to see the natural beauty of your face and so forth. Therefore, I'm going to object of you being covered up. Well, from what I know, and I don't know a lot about the Muslim traditions, that would be very offensive to them. But if we just reverse it and we say, well, I want you to be uncovered, or I want you to wear clothes on the beach because I'm offended by the fact that you're nude. So why can't I place the, let's call it, the traditional American values on them? Why does it always have to come our direction? What do you think of that?
Well, my mother and parents taught me that when in Rome, do as the Romans do, right? So, in fact, just what you said is what we are actually saying. We're saying, hey, if you're going to be in our country, be uncovered, you know, don't have a headscarf on, yada, yada, yada. Yeah, a burqa or whatever. And what they're saying is that, and of course, when we're in their country, to be safe, you know, the issue is to be safe. We grow beards. The men grow beards, our special forces. We wear garments that are similar to Arab clothing versus Americanized clothing. And we do that so that we won't get killed, maimed, shot, or hurt, and then so we can appear to be friendly. And we're doing as the Romans do. Now, because of their religious constraints, because they have a whole spectrum of people involved in different aspects, conservative, non-conservative aspects of the religion, the people, they want us to respect them as they are. It's the same similar message that the breastfeeding message is. Not everybody's going to wear their headgear. You know, I work with Muslims on a board, and some of the ladies look ordinary, like U.S. Citizens with makeup, et cetera, and others that are associate wear some type of head or facial covering. So it's a matter of your interpretation based on your ethnic group and your religion right there. But I don't think you can make someone come to Rome, for instance, and have to take off their clothes. I think you can go to that beach and be in clothing, or you can go to that beach and not be in clothing, or some other, you know, spectrum of that. That's really what's going on right now is that, you know, if you look at everything in music or whatever, people are going to do their thing, and their thing may not be the normally accepted standard. The only problem is we don't normally, unless you run into a bunch of people that are bad, then we don't normally kill everybody for not being in cadence with, you know, the norm.
Right.
Are we saying because we're passive in that way, and I'm not saying passive is wrong. I mean, we don't want to physically beat someone up or kill them because they're not behaving the way we want them to. We're passive in that way that we're being taken advantage of, because you could also look at little things being eroded away. This was a traditional American culture or tradition or so on, being picked away, and we end up going towards the middle and become in some ways neutral, and we lose a lot of the American identity that made us as a nation special, as well as they're special for the things they have in their country. Why do we have to acclimate to someone else's culture? Shouldn't they want to be part of the, quote, American culture?
Well, hold on a second. I think Harold was trying to say something. Harold, you had some comments?
I was agreeing with Frank. We try to get with the norm of everybody else, but our norms does not supersede everybody else's norm. If we go to an Arabic country, we have to adjust to their culture. But here, America has we're so diverse in everything we do, so we make everybody else feel comfortable. And the breastfeeding issue, and I agree with everybody, it's a preference of what the woman wants to do, but I prefer them covered. There was a sit-in a couple of years ago in Dallas, Texas, where the mothers just, all mothers that were breastfeeding sat in the mall because the mom was kicked out because she was breastfeeding her kid and wasn't covered. But she has a right, I think what's the law that says you have a right to breastfeed your baby in public. And so they made a big deal out of it. So, you know, if you're going to do it, cover up, be respectful of other people, but don't just take advantage because you can take advantage.
Well, I don't know where we're going with this, because this big billboard that I've seen that started this conversation is, there's a big billboard that says, get over it. So women are trying to tell, some women are trying to tell us, this is something that should be going on normally. And I find it strange.
This issue is similar to the abortion issue that we're fighting over. It's a woman's body, and what they're saying is they have a right to, if they feel comfortable and that's what they want to do, to feed their child, they have a right to do that. You know, again, we have a right to disappear from that situation when it's happening, and we have a right to not be rude to a person that does that. I'm with you all, you know, as far as the exposure part of it. But if it happens, my part is to be a gentleman and not, you know, stare at the person while they're doing it. You know, do the type of things that are going to give that person some privacy without my engagement. I would hope that, and you run into, culturally, you run into different people, and some people are going to say, whip it right out and do whatever they think is appropriate and think you have a problem if you are bothered by it. But I'd rather get on with life and recognize that you're going to have a percentage of the people that are going to get on an aircraft, sit next to you on an airplane, and expose themselves while they're feeding their baby, and go to the Supreme Court if you object to it.
Well, you know, one of the things go ahead, Harold, go ahead.
On that same vein, I'm not sure, about a couple of months ago, there was, I think we talked about it, an issue with a young man who was being transferred to a young lady wanting to use the women's bathroom. So that's the same issue we have going with, we have to be so accommodating to individuals who want to just do what they want to do. So that ties along the same line of making sure that we do what is necessary and appropriate.
All right.
Yeah, I kind of think that you grow up, you know, this discussion about being politically correct, being courteous, of knowing, understanding what other cultural differences are in people, and what we do typically in our country or in one region may not be the same as someone typically doing so. I think that's important, to be educated in that and show difference to it, even though you may not agree with it, okay? And that's so we can all get along, because if we don't show the difference, then all we're going to do is throw rocks. Those people who believe that they can expose themselves and feed their child are not going to change, all right? And they're going to, you know, work with a higher law than the common law. And because the common law said you can't even wear, you know, the common laws in many of the states, you can't go and wear a bikini or a thong at the beach. That's because the common law prohibits a woman in most states and places to be exposed in what we call an ordinary bathing suit. But that's the way it was, you know, when in the 1800s, but it is not that way today, and we change that nationwide culturally. We want a little bit more to be exposing ourselves.
Well,
okay. Let me throw out a scenario, and I want to have some conversation about this scenario. And let's use the plane as an example. So I'm on the plane, sitting by the window. Next to me is my 13-year-old son. Next to him is a woman with a baby who decides to nurse her child with her breast out. My 13-year-old son is staring. What do I do?
Well, in school, they're not going to. That's not a nasty event or a corrupt event in school. So that's the first thing. Your 13-year-old son, unless you personally have taught him otherwise, he's probably not going to be bothered by that event. But we are, because we were taught differently.
I don't know. What do you think,
well,
Bruce?
I think there's nothing wrong. I would, and I'll put this into that answer. Short answer is there's nothing wrong with you politely asking that woman if she would mind covering up. She may not mind at all and do so. She may mind a lot and say, I don't have to. You don't know how she's going to answer. But you asking, there's nothing wrong with asking. And along that same line, your larger-than-life poster staring you as you go down, at you going down the highway, get over it. I would love to ask a lady, I wish one would call in and say, if I don't object to the act of you doing it, which is what you want to do, you want to be portable and easy, so to speak, and be able to do that in public, and I don't object to that, why do you object to covering up a little bit so we're both kind of happy? I get the feeling sometimes, especially on the internet, not covering up kind of says, look at me, you know, I can do whatever I want. And again, a little discretion, a little manners in that way, what's wrong with that? It's not the act that we're upset with or concerned about. It's the way they're doing it.
Right. Ron, you got something to say?
Yeah, going back to the 13-year-old, I'm with Frank on this one. I don't think that a 13-year-old nowadays is really going to care enough to even look. I think they're just going to ignore it. They're probably too busy looking at their cell phone anyway or playing video games, so they probably won't even notice
right.
in the first place.
Yeah, I think you're right on that one. All right. I think we've talked about that enough, but let me ask
The other difference I want to speak to is that, you know, we weren't taught sex education in school when we were coming through the school system. The kids are taught in a lot of states are taught sex education and the body parts. And the language they use is completely different than the language that we use. So they understand these body parts completely differently with a different orientation and a different feeling that we were exposed to as young people.
That's right. Yep.
All right. I want to change the direction a little bit. I know Ron had a comment. He called me and said, I have a subject that I would like to talk about. And I guess I'm talking. And Ron wanted to, and I should ask him if he wanted to bring it up, but the thing that got him were the 272 slaves that were sold to save Georgetown. And actually, there were Jesuit priests that sold the 272 slaves. And the question is, and it's brought up by a Caucasian gentleman who said this was wrong. And he said, I've never done anything, never thought about slavery or anything, but I know that this was wrong. Do we, because Georgetown has never tried to find out whatever happened to the 272 slaves and their descendants. So everyone's trying to figure out, does Georgetown owe their descendants any money? Now, Georgetown wasn't the only one. There are several universities that have said, you know, they've had a piece in slavery and they've done things that you know, to make their schools profitable that they wish they didn't. But so the question is, Ron, you wanted to discuss this. Why don't you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, I don't know if anybody else has read or heard about that, but, you know, I was actually I don't want to use the word shock because that's a strong word, but I guess maybe horrified, which is equally as strong, when I read that. And it really bothered me in many different ways. And I will probably offend some people by some of the things that I will say now. And I'm talking about Catholics, and I happen to be Catholic. I don't practice regularly. I don't go to church regularly, but I am Catholic. But, you know, what bothered me, one of the things that bothered me is, you know, we've got these Jesuit priests that sold these, you know, human beings for the sake of saving a university. And I know the thinking was different back then and slavery and all of that, but they're still human beings. And I think it's horrible and completely wrong what they did. And here to today, or, you know, yesterday, we have Bernie Sanders traveling to Rome to meet with the Pope. I mean, this is a very convoluted way of me saying that I totally disagree with Bernie Sanders, you know, going to the Vatican City to meet with the Pope, because I feel, you know, that we've got these bishops and these and the Pope that, you know, they're in my opinion, they're hypocrites, and they're being self-righteous in many ways, because number one, right now, and, you know, going as a gay man, I'm offended. I think African Americans that read this story should be extremely offended and bothered by this story. But for me personally, not being African American but being gay, you know, you've got the Catholic Church saying I'm not really sure even how they say it now, but they're accepting of being gay. But it's still, the Pope said, you know, marriage between two men or two women is not the same. So, you know, I'm thinking, who are you to tell me that? You know, you're self-righteous, and look at all the horrible things you did to these poor families, grandmothers, kids, you know, and now they're telling me this? Come on, give me a break.
All right, any comments?
I can make some comments. Okay. First, for me, the Georgetown situation, you know, I probably have known of it for 15 or more years. All right, so Georgetown is that way. Harvard is that way as well. So it is not an unusual situation. The situation is, how do you apologize? How do you apologize? And how do you provide compensation? And, you know, in an Asian country, you'd be providing compensation if you killed another relative. And we don't have that type of tradition. And by the way, part of this sign that you talk about has to do with whatever our traditions are. Okay? The Navy has traditions. The Air Force has lesser traditions because they're a newer service. So we have traditions that they say, what are they doing and how are they doing? But we continue to do it because we're the Navy. So in this and the university, as far as the Pope is concerned, you know, I am Catholic. I wouldn't give myself devout, but I don't miss church, and I do participate in a lot of religious activities. And I'm a member of that faith community because there isn't hardly any religious community that is not, including Muslims, that are not guilty of exploitation of the human being. All right. So now when we talk about marriage in the church has a, you know, this is the same as Augusta National Golf Course or similar to it. But Augusta said, we'll now allow black players to play on the course, or Hispanic players like Lee Trevino. And so we won't just go along with our membership, but our membership is going to continue, because we're a private club, it's going to continue to look like it is until we decide we're not going to allow anybody to make us change our membership. But they knew that change was certain and was going to happen. And it's like North Carolina on the bathroom thing we talked to last week. The governor knows that they're going to have to make a change, and the NBA is trying to allow them to make a change. So the Catholic Church is the way the change is going to happen in the Catholic Church. It's going to happen because the current Pope is going to appoint different types of cardinals who have a different type of thinking than some of the existing ones now, and that's how change is going to happen. And the change is already happening because the Pope cannot himself change and say, hey, we're going to now have gay marriage, unless he has a consensus, these people that are called cardinals in it. So that's what I look at. I look at, you know, when I was growing up when I was 20-some years old, I have a situation, and I may have told you guys this, but I had left California fully understanding going to Maryland, quote, the South, first time that I was going to a southern state. And one of the things when I left California was that the Mormon church, you could be a Mormon and be black, but you couldn't be on the council of elders and be black because the Mormons, God had not revealed to them that we still weren't with the sin of Cain. That's the way they perceived it, okay? So I wouldn't have ordinarily had a Mormon friend at that time, but in fact, that's the first thing that I collected as a Mormon friend. And what we did is when you leave race or religion out of the question or homosexuality or female versus male, you gravitate people based on your needs. You're helping each other, and we did. And then later found out that I was Catholic and that he was Mormon. And, I felt almost the same way about him being Mormon as someone would feel about me in those days of being black and trying to rent their house. Well, it wasn't an easy swallow. So, in my closing this particular segment, I don't think that the church is a hypocrite. I think the church has past sins and has sinned against mankind and needs to rectify that situation. And I think they're doing that by having the current incumbent as a pope. And I think that he, if he himself could legislate the change in the church real quickly, I think that people that were homosexual would in fact be allowed to be married. And at some point in time, and we know that there are some other religious branches. I work with a guy on a board that got suspended by his faith group for like, I think, 8 or 9 months because he married people that were homosexual. But we, in some churches right now, we have bishops that are homosexual, and that's fine. And they've made that the church, the Episcopal Church of the United States is one of those churches. But this club called the Catholic Church or the Baptist Convention or whatever hasn't gravitated to that yet, and it's going to be a slow move.
All right, let me jump in right quick. Ron, did you want to say anything else on this subject before we move on?
No, just very quick, if maybe Frank can clarify something, because I do remember reading that there was a first draft version, and I forget the name of the document that the Cardinals worked on. Forgive me for forgetting the name, but there was a draft that, as far as I understand from what I read, there was a draft where a large percentage or maybe even the majority of the Cardinals, it was a very liberal in terms of gay marriage, but then what actually became, I don't want to use the law, but what actually became the official version, the second version of it, was much more subdued and much more conservative than what some of the Cardinals had intended in the first version. Did you read that, Frank, or are you aware of that?
Yeah. Yes, I'm with that. In fact, he asked all the guys that just recently came together in the last year to speak their minds and a piece, and some people that were very liberal did speak their minds and a piece, and some conservatives did as well. So, you're left with a document. That one of the church's constraints is they try to stay, like the Supreme Court, they try to stay consistent with their previous teachings, okay? And then it periodically they call themselves out, and they have in the Georgetown situation, I think Notre Dame as well, but most religious institutions, whether they be Baptists or whatever, were involved in the slave, trade and were involved and looked the other way.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, if you go up to where we have an office with the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy, we're right there at the slave market, okay? The slave market runs in the middle of this street, and we're right there. So what happened is that there's signs up there with these different religious groups, the Methodists being one of them, where they were there participating, their bishops, et cetera, good for good and bad. And that slave market eventually, a white owner married a black woman, and the name of that market changed. change, and it's considered God's half acre. That's one of the names of that same piece of land as God's half acre, and it's owned by a black university, Virginia Union University, okay? But that's at what they call Shockhole Bottom, okay? So, yeah, take a look at that. But what happens is yeah, the church is guilty and has some implications of duplicity and how it, you know, if you look at the University of in New Orleans, Xavier University, that was founded by the church for black folks, okay, because they didn't have an institution that they could go to. If you look at a couple of the saints are black in the Catholic Church, well, not as many as there probably could have been or should have been. And so, you know, I'm not ready to raise my flag up. I don't raise an American flag in my front porch, and I don't raise a Catholic flag, although I can tell you that I work, and I understand that if you're getting ready to pick institutions, you're not going to find any institutions that are not without the stain of sin.
Yeah. Right. Okay, let's move this on a little bit. I want to ask everyone on the panel, I guess I'm going to ask you a question, but let me ask this question to Bruce. If a young kid, you do a lot of mentoring, so a young kid comes to you and says to you, I've got married about 6 months to the nicest girl, but she's become now the bitchiest person I've ever known, and she embarrasses me. What should he do about it?
Work harder at his marriage.
Pardon me?
He needs to, what I would tell him is, first of all, I would try and find out what is it that he perceives makes her act the way she does. They're trying to get at the root of the problem. Is the problem her? Is the problem him? Is the problem both of them together in their relationship? Is the problem money? Is the problem this? Is the problem that? Try and find out what it is. And then what I've always told a number of people and my kids is it's tougher, it's harder, but try to be the bigger person. Try to be the one that if someone says, you know, leaves you with the idea, you first, what are you going to do for me? You have to be the bigger person and get the ball rolling, so to speak. So I would really try to find out what's at the root of the problem, first of all, what's making him upset or frustrated, and then help him try to discover ways to possibly change that around. Because if you do that, instead of just handing him a solution, the discovery is by that young man, and he feels much more apt to follow it and much more apt to be proud of it because he's the author. I just helped him possibly understand or enlighten him to come to that conclusion. So that's what I would tell him.
All right, Harold, same scenario. You're mentoring a young man, and he comes to you and he says, I just got married about 6 months ago, but my wife is so selfish. What should I do about it? What would you tell him?
I would ask him, has she always been that way throughout their dating? And it may be that she is an only child, and when you have that only child syndrome, it's me, my. But in their premarital counseling, they should have been led to go through their self-discovery of how do you like to deal with a situation? Do you like having your own money? Do you like controlling the budget? That way he could have known up front of what her tendencies were as to being selfish. But going forward, I would actually have him with a older wise counsel for her and him to sit down and discuss how they got to where they are as a seasoned couple, and then talk about without giving them too much information about her selfishness, and then go back and do some debriefing together and ask, well, do you know when you do this, I feel this way, or when you take all of this, it leaves a void here. So that way he won't be directing negativity at her,
but also trying to find out where she stands mentally and where she stands in terms of her being selfish.
Okay. Let's go, Ron. You're mentoring a young man and he comes to you and he asks you this question, what would you say? When do I know it's time to separate from the person I'm with?
Well, that, to me, that's an easy one. And the answer is in your heart. As far as I'm concerned, if you're okay, there's a difference between loving somebody and being in love. So I would ask the young man to ask himself, if you are in love with the person, then, you know, whatever difficulties you may be going through, you know, they're worth trying to work them out. If you don't feel that you're still in love with the person, you know, life is too short to be spending it with somebody that you know is not going to end up being your life partner.
Okay. Let's see. Frank, someone comes to you, you're mentoring, and he asks you a question. My relationship needs to be nurtured. How do I nurture a relationship? What would you tell him?
Are you talking about two people nurturing their relationship between with each other? Is that what you're talking about, or just enriching oneself?
No. You know, a young man wants to stay. He just got married recently, and he wants to nurture. Someone told him he needs to nurture his relationship. What does that mean to him? What does that mean?
Well, you know, and I'm going to assume that this young person is a Catholic, or if they're non-Catholic, I'm going to give them similar advice. You know, if you're going to get married in the Catholic Church, it could be anywhere from 3 months to a year of you meeting with a deacon or priest or combination thereof and taking a survey. They give them a mental survey, you know, basically to see if they're compatible with each other. That doesn't mean they can't get married. They basically give them the results. And they ask them certain questions about the future things, you know, how you divide money, you use money, things like that. So you definitely have to have marriage counseling before you get married. But my thing is, good or bad, I counsel people always to be in church and be in religious practice on a regular basis, which is, I think, is very helpful to you being an improved individual and having a spiritual place to go to right there. So when people have marital problems or they're having problems like that, first thing I ask them is, do they go to church? And if not, I recommend a church that I think is going to be compatible with who they are as an individual. If they're a Catholic, I don't recommend all Catholic churches, because there are some that are compatible to that individual or not. If they're Baptist, you know, I would recommend the church that I think would help them to obtain higher values and to be able to make their life more comfortable and change their outlook.
All right. Let me change this a little bit up. I want to ask a question. This is for everybody. Answer this question. What are dads for? Okay. Bruce, answer that question.
What are dads for? Well, I think a child, you hear it all the time, but I believe it. A child, if you're going to be a parent, and you have a dad and a mom or two partners that are going to raise that child, you really need to have diversity and different perspectives. In this case, a father's or a male perspective on what he can teach the young child, either a girl or a boy, about aspects of life. And women and men are going to take it, I think, in a lot of ways, in very different directions. And even if you have a couple raising a child that isn't a traditional marriage, two women or two men or whatever the case may be, I think it's important to have those both aspects involved in raising that child. If it's not the two partners actually that the child lives with, maybe someone from the outside that's a good friend or a relative or whatever the case, to make sure that it helps I think, give them a more well-rounded education, not only in the things having to do with school and stuff like that, but also in life, more importantly, in life. And I just think there are so many benefits of having those two perspectives, that the male perspective in that is extremely important. And some of the evidence when it's lacking that we've seen in some families is really a detriment to the child's development in a lot of ways. And some people have said it's one of the major roots of the problems today, that the family unit is disappearing, is dying, is dissolving. And I'm not even taking into account that it's on the surface, it's changed its look. I'm saying totally dissolving, not there anymore. And I think we need to do whatever we can as men to make sure that that doesn't happen, whether we recognize there's children out there that need that male influence in their life, big brothers, big sisters, all kinds of volunteers, mentoring, all kinds of things that you can do to help interject and bring that value system back into the relationship.
All right, Harold, answer that question. What are dads for?
Dads are protectors, providers, teachers, and leaders.
Okay. Well, what are they for?
That's what they are for. They are to be the providers of their household and to their children, protectors of their children and household. Dads are to be teachers to teach their children right from wrong, and leaders, show them how to be a leader and not a follower, and show them the good example that dads do.
All right. Ron, what are dads for?
Pretty much what Harold just said. I think it's to nurture, care for, protect, and raise another human being that is going to be a productive, contributing member of society, and not somebody that's going to detract, but somebody that is going to add to humanity.
All right, Frank, what are dads for?
Well, they're the procreate, for one. That's kind of a definition of the church that I belong to. You know, they are, as earlier stated, protectors, and they provide for the financial well-being and the physical well-being of their family, and they're the head of their family, and their responsibility is to provide these the family members with the requisite education and training to make them good citizens. So that's what a dad is supposed to be.
All right. So we talked a little bit about family. Let's move on to career. I'm going to make a statement, and I want to just throw this out there, and then you guys come back with statements on it. My career is defined by the problems I solve. The tougher the problem, the further you have come, and the further you could go in your career. Is that true, Bruce?
No, not necessarily.
Why not?
A lot of careers don't involve problems at all. Mine just happens to be in my professional career as a professional engineer. It's very much about problem solving. But I think equally,
Bruce, tell me a career that does not involve problems. I don't know what that is.
Maybe you're right, but I was thinking more in the traditional sense of their career being nothing but problem solving. Yes, there are problems to be solved in every career. You're right about that. But it's not necessarily the major emphasis in every career. You can be a public servant in a variety of ways. It doesn't really involve problems. It revolves around chores and things that you do for others. That isn't necessarily a problem-solving function. Very vital, but it's not problem-solving. That's what I was trying to say. That's very critical, and they don't all involve problems.
All right. What about you, Ron?
Can you read me the statement again, please?
Okay. Your career is defined by the problems you solve. The tougher the problem, the further you have come, and the further you could go.
You know, I kind of equate that maybe to life, and the older one gets, the more complicated life gets, and it seems to come to the realization that the more we think we know, the less we know. So I'd say that there's truth to that.
What about you, Frank?
Well, I don't think that the value, you know, my current understanding is that our value is not measured by what we accomplish. It's about what we do for others. So that's one of our things that we're trying to work through as a country, and we're trying to work through with religion. And I share the other belief that just because you think you solved the problem today, it's not the best solution always, because as we get further along in our human experience, we come up with better solutions typically. And that's some of that discussion we've had today. So, again, I don't think the value of one person has to do with their job or their position or what they solve. And I think most civilians, by the way, are not tied to that. It has to do more with, from a religious perspective, of what they can do or have done for their fellow man.
Okay. All right. So we have about 4 minutes left of the show, but I want to bring in something, and I want you guys to listen to this, and I'll tell you why I'm doing it in a second here. Let's see if I can make this all work. All right, everybody, today is Frank's birthday.
Hey!
Happy birthday, Frank.
Happy
birthday.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Well, Frank, so as another year has gone through, what is the one thing that you say that I accomplished? You know, something positive, something and I would say, you know what? I've seen pictures, I've seen your Facebook. I think the one thing that you are giving to the world right now is the fact of being a grandfather. I think you're probably one of the best. Based on what I'm seeing in Facebook and the kids and everything, you did a lot this year in terms of giving nourishment to your grandkids, and I'm sure they will one day appreciate you so much. But I know you're a role model for all of us, and those of us that on the board here who on the panel who looked at his Facebook, I'm sure would agree with me that was so, you know, it's always encouraging to see that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and you know, I got, you know, as I think about it and reflect on the life and everything, I got great nourishment from my grandparents, and that made the difference in who I am and what I'm about. And so I'm thinking that, you know, I have a lot of things. I've got great health and great physical ability, but I'm really thinking that the most important thing, contribution that I can make, is to be a good influencer over some other human beings that are younger than me, and by being in their presence and being an example. And then after that, I've won the ball game. Okay? So that's how I feel about it.
All right. Well, we want to wish you a happy birthday. I hope that the rest of the day is fun for you, and I hope you've had fun so far. And for the rest of the panel, everyone else, thank you for joining us again. We look forward to seeing you next week. Everyone, thanks for being on the panel. You're out there, and you did have a chance to get in. We'll be here again next Sunday, 6:00. So with that, once again, Frank, happy birthday. And to my panelists, thanks for joining us.
Have a great week,
everyone.
Have a
good week. Good night, everyone.
Yes, happy birthday, and have a great week, panel. Take care.
Bye now.
Thank you.